This is the Amp Hour Podcast, released August 28th, 2023. Episode 644, Garbage Ninjas.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Campbell of Contextual Electronics.
What's up, nerd?
You know, I have never been accused of being on the bleeding edge of anything.
But, right. We were on the bleeding edge of podcasting back in the day, you know.
Yeah. I mean, okay, maybe that's the only thing I could be accused of.
Right.
Not like we took advantage of it.
No, it's not like we're
our podcast to Spotify
huge...
for $100 or anything of the sort. We're just, you know, kind of still here. I recently got into two trends that are already very far over. The first being I got a fitness tracker in 2023. I got a fitness tracker, Dave, for the first time. And I started baking sourdough bread, which people from 3 years ago would go, oh, yawn. Yeah. So those are the two things that I...
I didn't know baking sourdough bread
was
a thing.
It pandemic, was at least a lot of people I knew, you know, it was like let it lock in type thing. It was like, there ain't else anything else to do. I might as well make some bread.
And, right.
Let me tell you, I'm pretty good at it. So take that, people from 3 years ago. The fitness tracker is a little bit more interesting to this audience, I think, just because, you know, it's a tiny electronic device. And there's Kalman filters in there and accelerometers. And they're pretty simple in, like, their base idea, but, like...
Oh, there's a lot of software.
You know,
magic that goes into it now. Is it like, does it do your pulse thing? Does it do the...
It does the pulse. Yep.
Yeah. How
it
does
says
it like...
I walked 8.3 miles today, though, or whatever that is in kilometers. Sorry.
And how does it do that? Does it pump the infrared through your skin or whatever? And
yeah, if you pull it off your... So, like, I have the Inspire 3, the Fitbit Inspire 3. And if you pull it off your wrist, like, there's just, like, a pulsing multicolor light that's trying to get through my skin to detect my heart rate.
Top, or is it under the band?
It is on the top of my wrist. Yeah. So like thicker skin too, which is
surprising. Because it'd do better if it was on the bottom of your wrist because there's like hair and there's no like, you know, whatnot.
Well, actually, I don't know if you know this about me, Dave. You probably wouldn't know this. I have silky smooth. No, I actually have silky smooth arms. I was going to say. Yeah. So it's interesting. It's like, you know, quantified self. Well, that's a term from what? 15 years ago. I mean, these are like literally, how old are these things? Like when did people start wearing these things? I don't even know.
Oh God. What was the big one? Even we had one back in the day. It was the, and you wore the chest strap.
I know what you're talking about. And it was Ant. It was the Ant's, the protocol was Ant, Polar.
Yes, right? Yes. It was Ant. Yes, that's right. Yeah, it was. Polar? Oh God, I can't remember.
Polar strap. Wasn't that what it was?
Sorry?
The Polar, wasn't it Polar?
A Polar. Yes, the Polar. Yeah. Yes, they were like the innovators, weren't they, I think? And
they were definitely, the earliest ones, and it would like talk to like certain very high-end watches and stuff like that, or it was before.
Well,
that was before
they would have their own watch, and then they teamed up with the watch makers, and you'd have Polar support built in or something like that, but they had their own watches, and they'd have the waterproof chest band, and, you know, it's like, it was a thing. But, nowadays, no, they just sit them on the wrist and you kind of get the infrared thing through the skin. And, you know, it's actually very different now. So,
yeah, I mean, I thought that was like actually skin contact too, like the Polar ones. I thought that was doing like...
It was on the chest strap. It was through the chest strap, but that wasn't infrared. That was electrodes. Yeah. And surface contact electrodes. And and they didn't work if you hadn't sweated yet and stuff like that. So you had spit on them. Yeah. So you had to put some spit on them to start off with, you know, to before you sweated.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've been, you know, in my younger days, I was fitness savvy, but I have not been very fit the past, let's say half of my life, the second half of my life, I have not been very fit. And I'm still not going to be fit, but I am going to be having a device telling me I'm not fit as well.
Right. Okay. Which is, yes, physique, as long as you log it, it's like, yeah, the,
also telling
yep.
me.
Yeah. That is the difference between science and not science, is just writing it down as having the data, right? That's the difference between fit and unfit, is having the data, is it?
Is it $100 yeah. smartwatch?
Right. See, I've got a great way to avoid spending any money on any of these fit smart doodads. You simply go to the gym, or you go for a run, and you go 100%. Like, you go flat out. That's how you do
like
it.
Sounds like Dave turning.
You don't have to measure anything, right?
I have a foolproof plan for you to be the fittest person you can be, both mentally,
exactly.
physically, and emotionally.
That's it.
Give it your all every day from the start. Also, buy my supplements.
Buy my natural performance supplements. Living Force vitamins, and you know,
So I don't know. It's there's a large industry here for sure.
Oh yeah, yeah, because people love their doodads. People love their flashy. Oh yeah, I see it like gym, like before the class actually starts, everyone sets their. You know, usually it's an iWatch. Don't iWatches have rudimentary thing? Or maybe they've got Fitbits. I don't know. I don't take a close look. But yeah, they start their watch at the start of the class, and it's like. Like, and they're usually slackers. Like, people who have these things are usually, I don't like to stereotype, dude, but sorry, the people that have these things are usually the slackest people in the class.
I'm matching your personal.
Yeah. They've got their tracker and they set their calories and like, and they come out of the class and they didn't even sweat. And here I am, like, everyone's just, you know, staring at me going like, well, what the f***? What drugs is this guy on? Sorry about the, drop the F-bomb there. Maybe edit that out.
Dave is passionate about the F word fitness.
Oh boy.
Yeah. And so two interesting things that I learned in the course of my research around this. Well, not research, but just all of the Googling that I'm doing around this. First, not even Googling, that was a lie too. My aunt, she is not particularly fit, but she does wear an Apple Watch. And her watch told her, hey, you have an arrhythmia, you should go get this checked out. And like, to the level where like she went and got a pacemaker. Like, that's the kind of detection.
Okay.
Like, and this thing will actually apparently give me.
Jeez.
So like, just like early detection type stuff. Pretty interesting, I think.
Right.
Interesting. The other one, the 10,000 step number. I was looking it up yesterday, and apparently that was created by a Japanese company in 1965. They came up with the idea of the 10,000 steps because they were selling some product called the 10,000 step meter.
Yeah, right. and because it probably only have the 4.5 digits on there, so it could only go to 10,000, could it? Or it could go to 9999.
After you get 9999, it just
rolls
over.
Yeah, it rolled over.
Yeah. It is interesting how that, you know, that kind of marketing stuff makes it way into the
it's all psychology, dude, and it's all marketing, it's all psychology, and it's all, you know, and it's all just, 10,000 is a nice round number. It sounds good to people.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like the 1,000 hour, what is it, the 1,000 hours you have to
10,000 hours, yeah. No,
10,000 hours you have to do to get good at something, you know, or to not get good, but to get expert, which is bullshit, you know. It's absolutely complete bullshit, but, you know, people like it. It's a round number, you know.
Uh-huh.
So,
it's easy to talk about. Yeah. Anyways, pretty interesting device. You know, thinking about what's in here, I should probably look at the teardown, but Bluetooth.
So, like, what is it? The Fitbit what?
Inspire 3.
Inspire 3 teardown. Yeah. I'm gonna have a look.
Fitbit, I actually haven't looked. Oh, yeah, iFixit. Of course, I have that. Really tiny touchscreen, though. Like, not much going on in there,
right? Hang on. Right.
But sensors on board. Oh, you can buy. Oh, wow. Look at this. Yolgroup.com. You can buy the full teardown for 8,000 euros.
What?
Can I borrow 8,000 euros?
Oh, I see it too.
I've
Who's the Yule Group? Is this a group that does like, is this the similar to that? Who's the Munro guy who does the car teardowns? You know, you can buy for like $10,000. You can buy the complete bill of materials for the latest Tesla, you know, because he tears it down bit by bit. I never did get around to doing that video because I've still got the PDF. I've got the PDF of the BMW i3 EV, which is like 10 years old now or something.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's incredible. It's incredible. So you buy these, you know, they only sell like, you know, I don't know, they
only need to sell a bunch, and they're selling them to other manufacturers, probably, right? Like,
they're selling to other manufacturers, and they have a cost breakdown of how much this screw cost and how much this molding cost, and you know, they've got like, it's incredible. Okay, so this is a Yule group, this is a price at okay, right? So they sell reports,
right? That's kind of interesting, I guess this came out and
there's no details on it, like.
Yeah, no, right. There's nothing.
There's no sample or anything. Like, you think they give you a sample or something? What the hell? I'm not paying my 8,000 euros without a sample.
have a copy of one of these things. It would be interesting to see one.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe we should like talk to the old group and be like, "Give us your old ones, and we'll just talk about them on the Amp Hour."
Right. Yeah. Free publicity.
And they're like, "No, we get 8,000 euros per teardown, so we don't care about
screw,
you guys."
Well, screw you. All right. Yeah. Well, there you go. All right. So it's one of these newfangled. Yeah.
It does wonder, make you wonder too, like, could anyone just go? I mean, like, it's obviously they do branding and that sort of thing, but like, could anyone just go and start tearing these things down and making reports out of them? You know, like, I guess that's the business.
Can. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. It's a business, but you've got to have the rep for it, I guess. You've got to, you know, like, it's a chicken and egg kind of thing. I don't think anyone's going to buy your report if you don't have the rep, and if you don't have the rep, you know.
Yeah, maybe 800 euros, not 8,000 euros.
Anyway, I am staring down at a gorgeous from Tech Insights, a gorgeous high definition PCB shot, and it's got weird marking chips that, you know, I don't know. You'd have to try and reverse engineer them, but there's two main chips on there, I guess. Three, well, there's like five or six, but other ones are smaller.
This is the BMW thing you're talking about?
No. This is the Inspire 3.
Well, how'd you find this? Send me a link. Come on, man.
I did Fitbit Inspire 3 teardown and then go to Google Images, and there they are.
Oh, images, yeah.
Images. That's the trick, lad.
That's the jam. That's the jam. Yep. I got stuck into the Yule group.
Right. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, I see.
So,
yep.
Meh.
All right. Well, I guess we'll just sit here reading this. Everybody, take a break. We'll get back to you in a few.
There you go. Someone's done it. Who's the YouTuber who's done a tear down? I'm going to give him a shout out. It's Do It Yourself Easy. DIY Easy has done a tear down. There you go. Mm-hmm. And a complete tear down video showing you how to open it and everything else.
No, this is a different one. I'm looking at a different one. Are we looking at the same thing? This is the Fitbit Charge. Oh, that's why.
Oh, Versa. Okay. No. Whatever. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised there's not a lot of chips in there, right? I mean, like the sock is often, you know, has a microcontroller baked into it, right? I mean, like and then a couple sensors and battery and charging, and that's about all she wrote, right? I mean, like, you don't need much else there.
Oh, here we go. No, there is a double-sided load. Oh, there's a vibration motor on it. So your one, it actually vibrates, does it?
It does, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So a little vibrator motor in there. It's an ST Micro. It's a 32L485 JC for those playing along at home. And there's a couple of other ST Micro parts. Oh, ST Micro Blue Energy. So that'd be the Bluetooth thing. There's a Maxim 14676. Don't know what that does. You know, power management stuff, I guess. There's another ST Micro LIS 2HD. What does that do?
It's the accelerometer.
LIS-2. Right. Yeah.
I actually use the LIS 2DH 12. That's the one that I have on my latest design.
Oh, okay. Right. Same one.
It's in the Zephyr device tree. There is a reason to use a part if you don't know. When it's in Zephyr, it's a friend of mine.
Okay. Fair enough. Who else is using Zephyr? Who are the big customers? Who have you got?
Well, all the new Nordic stuff is. So I went to the Nordic Tech Days. I was actually surprised by this number. So they come through, they did like a tour back in August. It must have been back in like March, April. But they like come around and then like they basically do like product updates to, you know, a conference room full of different people instead of, you know, I'm not part of a company that they would come and cater to and walk in with like a salesperson, right? So this is like a generic, it was at like a local community college and it was a big lecture hall and you sit in there. And and they talked about, so Zephyr is like their new thing, but they talked about like something like some significant portion of all the people are still using their old SDK still, because the if you go by volume, because you think about like, well, all of the things that are at volume were built 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, and they using were that old SDK. Yeah, of course.
Right, and so they're still supporting it, of course.
Of course.
But all the new stuff, so I think the new stuff is, all, they're, you know, they're heavy in Zephyr, which they made that decision about 3 or 4 years ago. And so I would imagine everything in the future coming out of right. Nordic dev shops will be Zephyr.
That's an interesting thing. At what point does a company go, let's not support this anymore? I guess it's how big your customers are and how much they scream, you know, and if they stop screaming anymore, then we gently, you know.
Right. It's just like it's fewer and fewer FAEs or internal people. And then they just start to say, well, there's no new features. And then eventually
you're right.
And then if you pay enough money, it's really like forever. Right. I mean, it's
Point, of course.
For support. So,
That's baked into contracts too. I mean, I've actually done contracts with chip companies that say you will support this chip for the next 20 years. It's like, you know, that's bait. Like they have to get the CEO to sign off on it, or, you know, it has to be a company director, I think, has to sign off on it. That you're going to support this for our widget for the next 20 years. And it's
as long as you keep paying the increasing prices too. Don't forget about that.
Right. Of course.
Yeah, there's no price fixing there. So they're going to make it more and more painful. I think that's the other thing. They up the prices. So it makes sense to pay for the migration in people hours, whatever.
Right.
In the smartwatch space, Aiden, who was on the show, the one two in the augmented reality headset, he was using a part called the RT500. And that is a part that's targeting the smartwatch industry. I think it's in some of the Garmin products.
Okay.
Because they like have a bunch of circular displays they support or something like that. Like something where it's like, oh, this is going into a watch, right? and so he was using it for his smart, heads up display thing, the augmented reality. But they're definitely playing in that space, the smartwatch space. And that sort of thing. Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know. It's interesting with like Apple in the smartwatch space. It's like that feels like that's the giant in the room, but you know, there's still a lot of money in it, so they're trying different niches. And you know, like the people that are doing GPS and that aren't cell connected or whatever. So there's a lot of, it's like a secondary cellular market basically. It's a third screen kind of thing.
You know what the ironic thing about these Fitbit smartwatches is, or these fitness watches? Is that the fitter you get, the lower your heart rate gets for a given activity. So it's going to think that you're actually getting not as fit, because it's all based on heart rate, right? Because they've got accelerometers in there, but they can't judge how high you jump, how much force you put into stuff, how much effort you're putting into the cycle, how much, you know, like they can't like get, you know, force feedback like that. And
what are you tracking in that case? Sorry, you mean you're tracking like calorie burn or something like that?
You would be tracking calorie burn based on heart rate. The whole point is that the fitter you get, the more your body gets used to it, and the lower your heart rate is for like given activity, even though you're working twice as hard as somebody else. Yet your heart rate might be, you know, 10 to 20
beats bringing lower. A lot of personal issues to this, a lot of personal feelings to this conversation.
No, all these hunters
at the gym are not trying hard enough for Dave. Yeah. They're all wearing watches and Dave's not.
I think they're all carrying bloody phones into the gym. I'm not.
I know.
I'm the only one who doesn't take a phone into the gym.
It's going to be okay, buddy.
What's wrong with the human race?
Who hurt you? Tim Cook has to answer to Dave.
I think the thing that is abundantly clear
in all of this stuff, and like, so my wife has a iWatch, whatever, the Apple Watch, whatever, and like, you know, I've got this thing now. It is all an approximation, right? It's all, there's algorithms and there's all this stuff, but they're not super accurate. They're all inferred things. Yeah. And I think they're amazing for what they are, right? I mean, like there's Kalman models where basically they're detecting that, like, you think about the output of an accelerometer, right? It's like, so this thing is getting some kind of interrupt that I'm moving. And then it's like, oh, I moved from, X4 to X4, Y X2 to yep. X5, you know, Y1, and they're like, oh, that's a step, right? Or they do yep. it twice, and it's they do the difference. And it's just like, yeah, Kalman filters are amazing and yeah. all the sensor
features. But how hard and fast did you do that?
Well, there's, you know, there's acceleration, and there's definitely jerks out there, right?
Right. Who jerk more than other jerks?
Yeah.
Right. oh boy.
Yeah, I don't know. It's all, but it is definitely all approximation. And like I said at the yep. beginning of the show, like my watch told me I went 8.3 miles today, and I did not go 8.3 miles today. So like it's still
okay.
Yeah,
I mean, like, right. Okay, so it couldn't even count your distance accurately. Why? Because you were flapping your arms around like Kermit the Frog. What were you doing?
That's what it was. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Kermit arms. Kermit.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's like I think it's inferred like steps and your gait and all these other things. So I don't know how.
Oh yeah.
Hopefully it updates at some point, but
yep.
I guess if it's consistent enough, it could be precise without being accurate, right?
Yeah. Well, interestingly, I went to a sports podiatrist the other week. Okay. And on the recommendation of my physio, because I've got, you know, a knee issue, like, because I actually busted my other knee. Yeah, I busted my other knee. And,
oh, no, really?
And,
oh, no.
And I didn't even know it. Yeah, I didn't even know it. Wow. Anyway, and it healed itself, so I went and had a scan.
This is the problem, Dave, when you don't wear a watch at the gym and you're just going 100%
right.
all the time.
It could have told me the Fitbit. You've torn your meniscus.
Slow down, old man.
Slow down. And anyway, so the interesting thing is I did a poll on Twitter about whether or not people thought podiatry was quackery or not. And I think the majority of people think podiatry is quackery. So that's interesting. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in there.
What about podiatry, though? I mean, they're just...
Oh, well, because they've got one tool, like, you know, because like the thing is that they've only got one tool, which is orthotics, yeah. right? That's kind of like, you know.
Oh,
like
I see. Yeah.
They only
yeah.
have one answer. Oh, yeah,
right.
You've got to
store
get
back,
orthotics.
Put in the orthotics, yeah.
Right, put right. in the orthotics, right? We'll sell you
getting headaches or orthotics. Yeah, I feel like that's a lot of doctors, though, too, like chiropractors, too. You know. Like,
oh, yeah. Oh, well, that's
you don't need to crack my back when
you know,
I have a cold. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, in podiatry, but I went in and found it actually quite good. She knew, you know, a lot, you know, analyzed my walking and stuff like that, and I've got all these sorts of issues, and I don't actually need surprisingly I don't need the one tool that they had which was the orthotics. It's my hip toe alignment and that sort of stuff. Although I do apparently have impressively flexible feet, and that's a quote. So there you go. Apparently I'm one of these flexible feet people, and if I roll my, she was quite jealous that if I roll my ankle, like, I don't actually, like, I can just walk it off. I don't actually damage anything. Apparently there's a certain type of person. I'm one of those flexible, weird, flexible feet people. So,
basically, a superhuman at this point.
Yeah, pretty much. Who breaks?
Yeah, you should use that as your one thing that you do to solve problems. Oh, you can't figure out the resistance, the 4-wire Kelvin resistance or measurement rather. I've got flexible feet. I could help you with that.
Oh goodness.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Speaking of teardowns.
Yes.
I just released a video just moments before we started this. 1980s. I went back to old school.
Yeah.
Old school boombox from the 1980s. Ooh. The boombox from the 1980s. Uh-huh. Teardown. Yep. It was very interesting. It's like, you know, I actually split a clip of this over onto my second channel, and it was how the volume and graphic equalizer board, you know, how they got the slider pots, you know, so they got the 5-band graphic equalizer slider pots and the volume and balance controls and stuff. They're all on this dedicated board, and all the boards are single sided, by the way, none of this double sided rubbish, right? They're all single-sided, and it's just got all these cable looms running over to the graphic equalizer board. So all the LM324 op amps are all on a different board. Then all the analog signals just go over via this unshielded cable loom. You know, it's like
past
good
the
enough.
Speaker.
You know, right. Yeah. It's just good. But they're actually amazingly engineered, these boom boxes.
Oh, no doubt.
You know,
especially for
how they actually
I mean,
produce
what year
them.
Did this? You said this is 80s? What year? What year
That's something I didn't include in my video, is what date was it?
You say 80s, right? So yeah, that is But also, yeah. like, you know, the time.
Well, it was before 89 because it was used in the movie Say Anything. It's the boombox which he holds over his head, right? So it was at least before that.
That I was thinking that was going to be, because I was thinking of the kind. So Joe Grand did a video about the. Did you see Joe Grand's video?
No.
It was, I guess, around. Oh, he brought it to Embedded World, so it must have been March timeframe. But basically, he built a piece, an all PCB boombox.
Oh, I said the world's thinnest boombox. Okay. I'm looking.
I think
the
it was because Joe got a sponsorship from the maker of the piezo. Elements. I think that's why he made that. I was like, why did he do this?
You know, right. That's a cool project. Okay, yeah, I'll pay that. Yeah.
No, it was great. I mean, and the fact that it was all PCB too.
Yeah,
super
yeah.
cool. But he was modeling that after like the old school, like the one that the breakdancers used to use. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and he's got the cardboard down on the ground. Is he actually going to break?
No, he hired some
breakdancers. Okay. Oh, yeah. I'm watching it now. Oh, this is great. Oh, and he sticks the tape on the front. Oh, this is great.
Yeah.
But it actually works. Oh, that's great. And he's got LEDs that are built into the PCB, are they?
I think those are actually reverse firing neopaint.
Oh, okay. Right.
They wanted,
right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, this is great. Okay. Yeah. I'm sure it doesn't sound that great, but, you know.
It does not sound that great, yeah. Right. But, I mean, that's the point. Yeah. It's not really, you know, like, you need driver cones to really move some air, you know. Like
Of course. Yeah.
They're good for certain things, and it's not bass is not one of them. Yeah, so you want to get some bass, you gotta push some air. You know.
Yeah, that's a great video. He went to a lot of effort not only to build that but to shoot the video as well. Went outside and got a rapping crew and you know like a dance crew.
Yeah, breakdance crew. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Breakdance 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Classic. Breaking 2.
Breakdance 2. I know. Mate. That's what it's called here.
You know, it originated here, Dave. So.
All right. Yeah. But that's great. How did he do the color? Obviously,
like
he didn't get a multi.
I think he covers it in the video, but they did like eight passes.
I was going to say, you can actually pay to have it done. But, I can see he's got like different. Eight different colors or something. Yeah, yeah right. Yeah. So yellows, reds, blues.
I think the artist he hired, he told, would have this palette of available colors
right
too,
so yeah yeah well. Yeah, okay. So he like hired an artist to do
well,
that
Joe
yeah
is
to
the
draw
original bad boy. Listen to our episode with Joe Grand back in the
yes
day,
so yeah yeah that was, geez, that was a long time ago. Yeah,
I'll link that in.
Yeah former guest.
Talked to Joe in a while, but
that is wow. So we got sponsored to do that or something, I guess, because that's a lot of effort to go to just to make a video.
It was a big effort. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And hiring dancers. Wow. You know, if you're gonna hire dancers.
Yeah, I know. Oh, if you're gonna hire dancers, yeah.
Dave, you never hire dancers. Why don't you hire dancers?
I could hire. I don't know. I can. Right, marching band. I could have a brass band, and you know, marching through the lab or something. No, I don't know.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Oh boy. Anyway,
maybe you could hire the. Here's one. You could do you know, like the rugby crews that do the haka at the beginning, like the All Blacks.
Oh right, yes.
But if they're doing
I could do the haka
for a DMM probe promotion, they could be the All Red and Blacks.
Right.
How about that?
Yep.
That's pretty good.
Yep.
That's pretty good.
See, so like I would do stuff like that if a company like paid me to do like to spend like a month on a video.
Me, I would never do sponsored. No.
Same here. But I'm saying if like that's the only way I would do it is if I was getting paid to like not do anything else and just work on a project for a month. And then, you know, like, it'd need a lot of money.
Okay. You heard it here first. You heard it here first. Contact Dave, dave@eevblog.com.
Right.
Give him many, many chunks of dollars. And he says he'll do a sponsored video. I don't think it's true. I don't think so.
No, you don't think so? I'd probably do a sponsored video for $100,000.
Oh, okay. Well,
there's
the bar. The bar has been laid. Yeah.
Well, I've constantly turned down $5,000. So it's like to do one sponsored video. It's like $5,000 if you mention our product in a, you know. And that's not even a sponsored video. It's like we'll just put an ad actually baked in, you know. So it's not even a sponsored video, really. So I turned them all down.
Build hardware for you folks if you want to give them buckets of money.
Buckets of money. I will happily accept your buckets of money. I have a wife and kids. I have a wife and five kids to feed.
Yeah. Another reference.
Yeah.
And a pool to make. I mean, I've been watching your pool going in. Yeah. So, Mr. Fancy Pants Pool over here.
Yep.
How's it going? Is it done yet?
No, it's not done yet. I'll have a pool party and you're invited over.
Oh, right. I can come over for that. Yeah.
Yeah. You just, simply hop on a plane. It's not a problem, right? Yeah. It only costs you a couple of $1,000. How much does it cost to fly to Australia now?
From where I am, probably $2,500 on a good day.
Yeah. Yankee bucks. That's Yankee bucks. Yeah, wow, that's like $4,000 Australian.
Oh, is it really? Exchange rate's that bad?
Holy yeah. It's pretty crap at the moment.
Oh, that's pretty bad, dude.
Yeah.
No, the real problem is that it's. I don't know if you know this. It's pretty far away. It is pretty far away.
It's only like 14 hours or something. No, it's more from where you are.
It's 14 hours from the West Coast.
From the West Coast. I know,
6 hours on the West Coast, Dave. I live in the East Coast.
Oh, right. Okay. So it's 20 hours to get here.
Yeah, 20 hours if anyone flew that far. Right. Nobody does. Although apparently at some point.
No, they go from Dallas. You can go from Sydney to Dallas, I think.
I'm still 3 hours from Dallas, Dave. So,
oh, okay, right. Oh, well, that's not far.
17 to Dallas, and then there's layover.
Right.
Let's look on Google. Oh, $2,000. Oh, I could get there for $1,600 right
Bargain.
Now.
Bargain.
Yeah. I'm not going to, just so we're absolutely clear about that.
Okay. If a company wanted to like big bucks sponsor us to fly to it's still big because you've got a wife and kids now too.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Wow. This is 27 hours door to door.
27 hours door to door.
Yeah.
I still get invites all the time, you know, to like conferences and stuff. Oh, we'll, you know, like just come to the conference, we'll pay for your airfare and stuff. Like, do you realize how long it takes for me to get anywhere?
You should give him an hourly rate so that you can get on another plane.
Oh boy. Yep.
Yikes. Cool. Any other interesting findings from the boombox teardown you did? How'd you get this thing? Someone send you this?
No. I found it on eBay. It was on my watch list for years.
Really?
It was on my watch list. Yeah, I had it on the watch list. Yeah, because I wanted the boombox, right? So I just put it on my watch list and it eventually popped up. And I got it cheap. Like I could sell it for three times what I paid for it, I think.
What'd you pay for it?
Oh, I can't remember. I've had it for a long time. It was like, I don't know, it was like $150 or something. It wasn't much. But I reckon I could probably sell it for $500.
Dollar reduce or
Aussie bucks. Well, I could probably, I don't know. It's in really good nick. And it's highly sought after. It's one of the models people want.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to have like collector item type things like this, sure.
Yeah. Huh. But they're, I don't know.
Another thing to put in the background, huh?
Well, I don't really have space. I'm thinking about remodeling the lab because I'm not happy. Like, I don't really have, I shoot a, what?
Nah, you don't need to do that.
Why? Like, I don't really have decent backdrops and shit. Like other real YouTubers, you know?
I don't know. It's about like lighting more than it is backdrop.
No, I want, because I do a lot of, talking head type things and I don't really... I kind of do have a backdrop, but it's like, I don't know. It's not that great.
I wouldn't overthink it. I wouldn't overthink
it. No, wouldn't overthink it. No. All right.
I mean, people aren't there for that. I mean, they're
no, but it's, it's a small thing.
Mouth flapping,
Yeah.
Oh, what was I going to ask about? I watched your one with the... Why did you start talking about the micro supply? I saw you...
Oh, yes. Hang on. I think someone's at the door. Hey, courier. Hang on. Courier.
Boy. Editor! Help! Dave's inconsiderate. Dave's so inconsiderate.
You know, wouldn't you know it, I completely forgot that I am actually the editor this week.
Sorry about that. That was my man, Nixon.
More
put my earbuds back in.
More crap for the background.
That was my man, Nixon. I've got it. It's a Keysight box.
All right. The plot thickens.
Okay.
Don't open it live. It's an audio podcast, Dave. It's
right.
It's
not working. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I have no idea. I don't know. This stuff just turns up.
Yeah.
Okay.
The way to do it.
Fine. I'm looking for eBay prices at the moment. No one's got one. See, I could own them. I could get like any, someone's got a GF800. Oh, geez, $580 for a GF800, but that one's got like an 8-band graphic equalizer or 10-band graphic equalizer. Oh,
this is a high exchange rate right now. Holy crap! Maybe I should go there and just like buy stuff?
I don't know.
What was it like when, I don't even remember what it was like when I was there. It's 5 years. It's more than 5 years since I was there.
Oh, no, someone's got one. GF7600, 450. They say it's from 1983. Mm. So, yeah. Anyway. Oh, someone's got one here. Oh, yeah. There you go. Oh, that's in really good nick, too. Jeez, I've got two of them.
Okay, no more eBaying live on air. Okay.
Oh, it's missing a knob. Tragic.
How much time do you spend on eBay per week?
I used to spend a lot. I don't anymore. I've got a couple of things It used to be one of my main hobbies was buying. I've got over 1,000 feedback on eBay. I used to buy and sell. I used to buy and sell test gear on eBay. And,
right. I remember you talking. Yeah, I think we talked about it on the show before. You said you also would convert stuff.
I would import stuff because there's people in Australia who refuse to buy from overseas because they don't trust it. They'll get, you know, conned or something like that, or, you know. So I'd take the risk to buy it in the US or buy it in Europe or something, have it shipped over here, and then I'd, you know, clean it up, repair it, polish it, and make it look good. And then I would resell it for 2 to 3 times what I paid for it, you know. So, yeah.
Interesting.
So that was fun. It was a fun hobby. Yeah, I made some coin out of it, but, you know, it was more of just a fun hobby thing, just buying and selling test gear and stuff. So
I'm selling some furniture right now on Facebook Marketplace, and it is is my least favorite thing I've done in a long time.
Really? Why?
Because you have to talk to people, and they're terrible.
Oh, no,
and they're
humans.
They all feel like scammers to me. Like, they're all like, text me on this number, and I look up the number, and it's like, this is an odd fake number. Yeah, I mean, and then it says, like, they've all joined Facebook in 2023. What kind of psycho joined Facebook in 2023?
I actually like Facebook Marketplace.
It's not bad as a solution. I'm not talking about the software, Dave. I'm talking about the people behind the software
right.
and the susceptibility to scammers. Yes.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. No, I've really haven't had a issue with either Facebook Marketplace or eBay pickups or Gumtree is the other one here. You know, I mean, it's owned by eBay, but you know, it's like a secondhand thing. Whereas eBay is more of a new thing, you know, like you buy and sell your new stuff on eBay. And that was a push that they did. Oh, it might have been 8 years ago now. eBay actually pushed. They tried to push secondhand sellers out of eBay. And it kind of didn't work, but it
like the bidding versus
did.
Like an actual like they're trying
yeah
to
yeah
like
they made a huge change. They made a whole lot of back end and front end changes to eBay, so it was more for buying and selling brand new stuff. So all of your merchants just selling new gear, and they transitioned away, especially here in Australia. That's why they bought. I think the Gumtree one. Gumtree started independently. As like an independent, you know, Craigslist kind of thing. Yes, selling like local, you know, and it was local. So, you know, you put in your local area and what stuff's available and you go pick it up. Yeah. And then eBay actually bought them. And eBay then tried to push a lot of secondhand sellers over to Gumtree. It was like a thing here. Yeah. It was like,
But, you know, a lot of people. Yeah. So like my friend who built 3D printers, he set up a store on eBay. I was really surprised by it. I was like, I wouldn't have started like that, but I think it might have been around that time frame when they were pushing that sort of thing. And
it's a big thing, but they take just 13-15%, something like
sure,
that.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, market system. I mean, like, what's it called? Shopify takes not a small amount either. So,
oh no, I'm moving over to Shopify now. My store over.
It's but they all take some percentage. It's just, you know, between it doesn't really matter. I'm just surprised.
Well, it's actually
so many
rather small.
Buy...
They've just got so many freaking add-ons you've got to pay for.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. You would like invoices, would you? Oh, well, that's not built in. Hey, buy this module to make invoices. Like, screw you. Like, bloody Shopify.
I am surprised, though, that people, like, I know there's a lot of Chinese, like, electronics vendors that are, like, on eBay as well. And I never got into that mode, though. Like, some people are like, yeah, I'll just go buy a module on eBay.
Oh, I do that? That's my first, that's my first place. That's my first go-to place.
Yeah, I know I'm being a hypocrite here because like often I'll be like, oh, I'll just go on Amazon and buy it. And it's just like probably people buying on eBay and repackaging it in the US or something like that and just putting it in a storage.
No, my first port of call would be eBay. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure it varies by country and stuff, but no, there's still a ton of, you know, it's a ton of stuff on eBay. Like often if I just want like a convenient order process, I just go on eBay. If I want the absolute lowest cost, I'll go straight to AliExpress, you know.
Yeah. For example, I've got some good AliExpress stuff. I don't mind that.
Yeah, no, it works. It's fine. Yeah.
And if I'm customizing, go to Alibaba. I mean, like.
Yeah, of course. Varies by country. But no, eBay's still a thing. Yeah, so the whole push that they had to try and get secondhand merchants off there, it didn't really work. So all of your test gears is still on eBay. All your like secondhand test gears still there. So, although in the US isn't Craigslist probably just as big for like secondhand gear?
For secondhand, like broadly, yeah. I'd say like Facebook's actually eating some of that.
I'd like to know how much Facebook's eating from Gumtree actually here in Australia. Yeah. I suspect it's a lot. So
yeah, I mean there is. I just have bad feels about selling to people. I think.
Really? Oh no, we. You know, the worst thing is giving something away for free. Oh my god.
Hard. Oh. I would rather throw it in the trash.
Yeah. It pains me. There's a pro tip, put $1 on it or put $5 on it. Don't give something away for free, put $5 on it. Yeah, and then it stops all of the tire kickers from going, I'm coming. You know, if it's free, hold it for me. I'm coming from all the, I'll come next week. Hold it for me. Yeah, piss off.
I think the other thing, the only other way you can do that is saying, I've put this stuff by the street near this address.
Yeah. I've actually done that.
And I will take this thing down when it's gone. Yes.
I've actually done that on Gumtree. It's sitting out the corner of this road and this road.
Yeah, I think
for
that's
large good. Items, it's like it's sitting out there. Just go and pick it up. And sure enough, like an hour later, it's gone.
Oh yeah. Garbage ninjas. That's what we call them here. Garbage ninjas.
Garbage ninjas. No, I haven't been. Haven't heard that one.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, because like where I grew up, it would be like middle of the night. You know, under the cover of darkness. Like you put something up the street and it's just gone. You know.
Yeah.
Coming like ninjas.
No, I hate my council for changing this. I'm sure we've talked about this before, right? The Verge collection, right? You know, you would put like we used to have our council used to have right twice a year or three times a year or something. I don't know. They used to have a council cleanup, as we called it here. So everyone would put the stuff that they didn't want anymore. You'd put it out the front of your house on your Verge strip, you know, and then the council would come.
This is what I call that. You're talking about outside your.
Yeah, I thought Verge was the US word because that's why I used Verge. I thought that was a Yankee thing.
I have never heard that term. You know, that's actually very regional. It's regional though as well. I say tree lawn from where I grew up because it was
tree lawn. Wow.
It was like there's like the street and there's like a cement curb and then be like
and then you have a grass strip in front of that. Yeah.
And then sidewalk and then more.
Yep. Yeah. This is only for suburbia for you non-suburbia folks. You city slickers. Yeah.
Yeah. I no longer have this. I now have cement everywhere.
Cement everywhere. Okay. Anyway, so our council used to have this. Yeah, where they would, you know, so you knew everyone knew what day it was. Everyone had put their stuff out the front, and your streets would look like like a war zone, right? Because everything's dumped out the front. But they come around and pick, but it only lasted for a day until they come around and picked everything up. But then all the people who wanted the free stuff came around, and they'd bring their box trailer, and they'd stand and they'd rummage through all your stuff, and half of it was gone by the time by the time the truck came around to pick it up. You know, it was great. But now you have to book it. Which is dumb because now instead of one day per year or several days a year, now you just have them randomly put out at different times and it's and then nobody knows, you know, like no one's going to go to the effort to actually drive around on that day to see if anyone's throwing anything out. So it's like, it's just potluck and it isn't as good for recycling stuff, you know? People who come around and reuse stuff.
Like, I agree. Yeah, I mean, more of it, I think you're right. I think more of it will end up in landfill and
Totally. Yeah. Yep. Yep, and it actually ends up worse for the neighborhood because you know you just have one or two people on the street. There's always stuff being thrown out, so it looks crappy, you know. Whereas before it was localized,
just
a single day,
and everyone says
then it's done, and then everything's
clean. What do you guys do for recycling electronics in Australia?
Not a lot, I don't think. No, we don't have. Well, we have the council here do have like e-waste recycle days. I think it's once or twice per year where you can bring in not only e-waste, but you can bring in batteries, all sorts of paints and chemicals and stuff like that. And they will actually separate them. And, you know, I don't know what happens to them after that. So, you know, there's some people say it's all a con, you know, it's all a big.
Yeah, it's
know,
all going
it's
down
all
the
bullshit.
Drain. Hopefully not. But yeah, I mean, I always just wonder about that. I mean, like, and like, how far is it going? Right. I mean, like, I forget who was telling me about it, but it was like they were burning circuit boards to like get the get some of the rare minerals out of them or something like that. You know, like
Yeah. That's a thing.
And it's just
I know. And the toxic fumes actually released. That's a big thing in India. Some of the slums in India and stuff like that. They actually burn all these. Yeah. They burn them all and then get all the precious metals out of them. Yeah,
precious metals, that's it. I don't know what to do about that, Dave.
There's an Aussie YouTube channel, I forget the name, who specializes in actually scrapping old boards and stuff like that.
Yeah, is that the guy that has like the jackhammer that knocks the caps off? I think we've talked about him.
Yes, that's right. He's got a jackhammer.
I think he's really cool.
A chiseled jackhammer that chisels all the chips off, and it's like it's horrific. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yep. You just can't bear to watch it. You know, it's like it's so bad.
Anyway. So back to the micro supply. Are you picking that thing back up?
Not really. I did a video on that, like just showing like the where it actually got to, and it was actually it finished. Finished in terms of it works, right?
Sure.
It's an actual working thing, but it never made it through
through
the production.
And
it actually looks like a final product. It looks and works like a final product, but it's not really manufacturable, let's say. Well, it is, but not cheaply at a price point that would.
Yeah, it's not. You don't want to manufacture it.
No. I would make changes.
You went over a bunch of the changes you'd want to make too, like the isolation. Yep. I thought that was interesting.
Maybe not. There's other ways to do it cheaper, but you know, and like some of the parts are obsolete now, or I'd use different. Sure. You know, I'd use totally different, cheaper parts, cheaper solutions. You know.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So, Like, and then there are people who think, oh, just give it to a contract manufacturer and they'll just make it for, like, it's not that easy. It clearly these people have never actually made anything before.
Right. Yeah. I've got early prototype stuff going in. I'm using the service of our former guest, Macrofab, going through that process currently. Yeah. Reminding me just, I think last episode that you and I recorded, I mentioned how rusty I am, and you know, getting that first DFM report back, I'm like, oh wow, I'm really rusty. parts that have 0805 in the name do not fit on top of 0402 footprints.
Unless you use the really, really ultra, ultra wide 0402 footprint.
That's right.
Footprint.
The ones that actually aren't 0402 footprints.
So that was
That was a goof on my part.
For those who don't know, there are actually in the standards, in the IPC standards, there are actually three designated official footprints for all these.
That's right.
So you can get like short, medium, wide, normal. Normal wide. I can't remember exactly what they're called. Normal wide.
Yeah, the ones that are the shortest one is like really tight too.
Right? It's really tight, and the other ones are designed to. No, you can actually put test points onto them. You know, like you can have probes come down and probe them and stuff like that. So
there's some parts that came through that I was a little disappointed about, like the it was just like a generic diode, but like, you know, like the older parts that are like generic part names, like this one was MURS 360,
right?
It has like multiple package sizes, so I got like that was one of the things that popped up in the error report that was like, oh, you have a SMC footprint here. No, other way around, it was like you have an SMB footprint, but it was an SMC part.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, there actually are both SMC and SMB footprints that have that part name. It's just like, how did this happen? You know, like I know how it happened, but like, it's just such a messy thing when you're going through, when your only real like index key is the manufacturer part number, and it's that generic, it really can start. Yep. I mean, you basically have to give like a DigiKey part number at that point or something, some other identifier, or you have to go to a more unique part that has the same characteristics, which I don't want to do because I want to have easily swapped and stuff like that. So I don't know. It's just, it's a frustrating part of your stuff.
It isn't easy. Yeah, no. People, like, you can't just turn a key and make it happen, you know. Although technically, like, you can throw it to a manufacturer and go, sort this out and just make it for me. But they'll charge you an absolute mozza for it, right?
Right. Because of all the you're pain gonna be figuring that they it out have to go on your bench, right? That's the other thing, is like, you're going to be, you know, dealing with the consequences of throwing that over the wall. And it's like, right. Why is this part changed? It's like, well, we couldn't source the other one, so we made a decision. We tried to source this one. So it's like, you know, do you take the pain now or take the pain later? Right. It's
just, right. Oh, boy. Yeah.
Manufacturing.
Yeah. No, it's not
but
fun.
But otherwise, you know, it's good service.
Yeah.
Formally mentioned on the show. Oh, this was an interesting thing. So speaking of CMs, so we've talked about Tempo Automation and they got put in through a SPAC, like a special purpose acquisition vehicle, like the thing where people are going public without like actually going public.
Without going public because it's part of another already existing public company somehow or something, isn't it?
Yeah, so
something
basically like it's like these companies, so like a investor type person, right? So Dave Jones, the investor, he says, I'm going to start a SPAC and I'm going to go raise money from a bunch of schlubs like me. And then Chris Gamble, the investor, says, oh, well, Dave's raising money and we're going to try and buy a company once the SPAC company has enough dough in it, right? So basically you're going to like raise this money blind. And you say, we're going to go and find some profitable entity to buy. And in this case, Dave Jones, the initial investor, decided to go and buy Tempo Automation. And that was what we talked about in the show in the past, where they said, like, it's this company that's worth like $900 million as a contract manufacturer. And it's like, no, I'm sorry. There are very few. There are some in the world that are $900 million, but they're not in a single building in San Francisco. So,
right.
And SPACs are like, On the way out, they're not.
Oh, really? I thought they were the new hip
thing
that all the kiddies were doing.
Yeah. So anyways, I got an email. Right. This was back at the beginning of the month, August 7th. Important update. Tempo Automation's holding, Tempo, announced on August 4th it has established a manufacturing outsourced agreement with Network PCB, an excellent manufacturing facility strategically located in San Jose, blah, blah, blah. I realize this is an abrupt transition. It was necessitated by unforeseen circumstances that were beyond our control. I think they're shutting down. Basically, they said, take your stuff over here. We don't think we can't do this. Once again, we regret this unforeseen inconvenience and we appreciate this opportunity to have served you. I'm just on their email list. I've never given them a single design.
Right.
Yeah. It was basically interesting. Like, we're done. I don't think I've seen any emails. I could be speaking out of my butt here, but I'm pretty sure they're dead. yeah. So,
oh my goodness.
Let's see if there's any news about them, but not great. Whatever it is, not great.
They've gone tits up.
I don't know about tits up, but whatever this is,
certainly being handed their hat.
This was bad. Whatever this was, it was bad. right. Yeah, you don't send out that kind of email of like, hey, we're your contract manufacturer, and we'd like to introduce you to this other contract manufacturer, unless. Things are going poorly. No. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It's like, yep.
Yeah. Oh, they do include at the bottom, customers with outstanding invoices from Tempo should continue to remit payment to Tempo as usual. Oh, thanks.
Keep on paying us, but we're shutting down. But yeah.
I should just be clear. I'm not sure they're shutting down, but whatever this is, it's not great.
Right. Oopsie.
Yeah.
Oops. Ah, well.
Best of luck. Best of luck.
Ah, well. All right.
Yeah.
Did you know that you can do a RISC-V core in 100 lines of code?
What code? I did not know that.
Verilog.
Really? Is it calling a library that actually contains the rest of the RISC-V core?
Oh, no. I thought the tweet's been deleted. No, look, I'll send you the link right now. Okay. Here we go. Here's the link. So, Bruno Levy on the Twitters, he posted the complete Verilog source code of a RISC-V core. He says it takes less than 100 lines or 200 lines if you have reasonable formatting and comments, just to be clear. And he said, he showed a lead matrix blinky scrolling project with, apparently you can do 100 lines of Verilog code. I'm sure there's like more behind it. Like, there's more libraries behind it, surely. Like, yeah, it just doesn't seem feasible. Like, I'm staring at the code now, and I don't know
it's
my.
It's
got to
be like a single. It's like executing like a single. I guess it does have a couple of.
Well, I don't know. It's got wire is load, wire ALU register is branch. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's got. It seems to have the instructions in there. I don't know how many RISC-V instructions there are. I've got no idea. I don't do RISC-V assembly. But yeah, it's got load store, which is about 12 fetch lines. And then it's got state wait machine, which is about 20 execute lines.
Yeah,
yeah. Wait, it's got the ALU. It's got the address generation. Yeah, and it's right back. Cool. And apparently it works.
I guess, when does it cross over? When is a device finally blessed as a... I mean, it has to be able to process, what, a single set of instructions or...
I
don't know.
I got no idea. Hang on. I'm going to RISC-V, which is
quickly
actually RISC-V, instruction set.
Ask ChatGPT.
Ask ChatGPT. I don't have it. You know, you got to log into it, and, you know, it's like, meh.
Yeah. While you're doing that, I was actually interested on archive.org. They have old manuals, and I was actually looking at the MOS microcomputers programming manual today. It was pretty great.
Right.
One of the Slack channels I was on was showing some old manuals. And so you can just go and look at the old programming manual. And you know, it's actually like they probably had like a pretty significant documentation department. So it's like written very like narratively. So that's pretty cool too.
I found the instruction list. It's not many.
Okay. I mean, there's a lot of special, like, yeah, you can make custom ones on top of it too. So that's
Okay. Right. Yeah. So this is like minimum. 47. The RISC-V base is small, contains just 47 instructions. That's the first hit I got on Google. So, yeah, 47 instructions seems, that's multiple locations, but okay. But geez, like,
wait, but do you have to handle all of them in order to?
I don't, that's the thing. I don't know whether or not this handles everything. But anyway, he's like published a project, he's published the source code, and I just thought that was really groovy. I just had no idea.
That's pretty cool.
You know, that's just nuts. So he can put that in 1380 logic units. He doesn't say using the tiny ice stick. So I don't know what actual device that is. I presume it's a FPGA of some description.
Yeah, it's a nice 40.
Right.
Processor.
Yeah. And it reckons he uses 1380 logic units. I don't know how big a logic unit is on the ice stick, you know, whether it's a flip-flop or it's a flip-flop
usually
with
it's
a bunch
like a lookup
of
table with
it's a usually a yep
addresses
yeah and, a LUT with a flip-flop and some sort of register
or
some sort of multiple registers, but it's amazing. Well done. I mean, that's just fantastic.
Yeah, that's good too, because that's like a great like intro. Like that alone is like a great headline to like be like, oh, I could try this, you know, like that.
Exactly. Like, all you gotta do is cut and paste 100 lines of code, like, and bingo, you've got your RISC-V soft core. Like,
Dave
what?
Might go and make a RISC-V processor. What do you think,
Dave? I might go make a RISC-V processor soft core on an FPGA. It'd be a great video, it'd be a great video. But I've never done Verilog. I've done some VHDL back in the day, but I've never actually done Verilog, so I don't know.
I was thinking the last time I did some ICE40 stuff with the open tool chain. That was at Teardown 2019, 2018. I don't know. It's been a while for that, but it was really easy, actually. Like the in terms of the like what you need, you know, like compared to the Xilinx or the now Intel, formerly Altera, tool chains that you know that are like 60 gigs. It was like know, very reasonable installs and very command liney. So I like that.
Yeah.
You know,
But it's like on top of that, like, how do you compile the code? How do you download it to the soft core? How do you attach the memory? Like, I've got no clue
how
to
do any
of
that. You just interview someone like Bruno.
Okay.
I'm going to show you. Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, I just think that's great. Hats off. Yeah. Very nice to show you how simple it could be just to put a soft core, I mean, in, you know, a bunch of.
Yeah.
To a tiny FPGA. Beautiful. But then again, like, you're better off, like, you're probably better off just buying, rather than mucking around with that, you're probably just better off buying a RISC-V chip and, you know, maybe.
Oh, 100%. I mean, if you want to get yourself a CH32 V003,
Exactly. Like, you know.
They're cheap. Actually, I was thinking, someone pointed out to me that I still owe you about 1,000 chips.
Yes, yes. You owe me $100 worth of chips. Yep.
$100 worth of chips. So
I have to just decide what project I'm going to use them on. And then, yeah, I will. Because there was no end date.
I think you just have to choose a package size, really. I mean, I can just.
Yep, because you're completely $100 wrong.
But you're gonna pay for? Are you gonna pay for shipping or?
No, that's included. No,
I mean you're still gonna get a lot of chips out of there. So,
right. So do you want to admit I was right about Twitter or X?
No,
now?
I do not want to admit you're right about Twitter.
I'm actually getting paid to post
site,
now,
and I don't like it, and I think it's. Not long for this world, but it's, enjoy it while it lasts. I miss all the people there. I do. I will say that.
Right. Well, I thought you moved to Mastodon.
I did.
Are you still using Mastodon?
Yeah, I still use it.
Yeah, right. It's still a thing, is it?
Still a thing. Right. Like I said, I wish everyone would have moved at once. If everyone would have moved somewhere else at once, I would go there. But in absence of that, I will be where I'm at. So.
I've heard it's not going that well over at Mastodon.
Well, yeah, that's fine. It's not a big deal. That's just I don't.
Well, they certainly didn't move to Threads.
They did not move to Threads. Yes, I was hopeful. I think the thing is, Dave. Much like we started the show, I am not a bleeding edge kind of person. So wherever people move, just send me a note. Send me a carrier pigeon or a registered mail, and I will pop over there and
dude,
wait
they're
a
still
years.
On Twitter.
And then
just
I'm
follow
not
the people you
want to
follow.
I'm not
just
going back.
Just follow the people you want to. Why? Just follow the people you want to follow.
Not for me. It's not,
why?
Not for me.
Why? Because sounds like an ideological thing.
It is entirely an ideological thing, and I don't want to be there.
Fine.
And but if they go somewhere else, shoot me a note through one of those. Pneumatic tubes like they have
right.
At the post office and I will pop on down a few years later and happily join the crowd.
Right. Fine.
But not Twitter.
All right. Oh, well, you can find me on Twitter. I'm there tweeting
right.
every day.
Find Dave on
tweeting
X
up a storm.
With
yep. I'm getting paid to post now.
Yes.
They actually very sent
good.
Me a check. Well,
good for
you know,
buddy.
Money. I'm not getting much, but you know, after 13 years, you know, it's a nice thing to
yeah.
Actually be
you're an influencer now, Dave. Yeah. I'm gonna go and find an endorsement from all the fitness people that need
people
electronics person to talk about quantified health.
Right, then we can hire a marching band and a you
that's
know
right,
a bunch of break dancers.
Right.
Yeah. Oh my god. Oh, this is
all right. Yeah. I think this has gone thoroughly off the rails.
No, we're done. Unless there's any last minute things.
No, I got
stupid amp hours up.
Hopefully a board to talk about soon.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. No worries.
See how it goes.
Sounds good.
All right, man. Have a good week.
Catch you next time.